be in Oklahoma, I want to thank Megan and the other members of the organizing committee for inviting me down to spend some time in Oklahoma City. It's a real pleasure to be here and be part of this program. I had a really good time this morning listening to the earlier segments, and it's good to see so many of you already back in the room, right? You're doing very well, and you're very attentive so far. I was interested in the title that we have for Dave Daly following me, because it's that's nice, but I raise cows. And those who know me fairly well in my work up at the University of Nebraska realize that besides cattle work, I've done lots of work with mice. Mice is a pilot animal or an experimental animal to learn about genetic variation and things we can then eventually do with cattle. So I wondered whether the organizers or whether Dr. Daly or someone thought that, well, I was going to give a talk about mice, so then we'd have to switch it to cattle when he came along. Well, I'm not going to talk about mice today. I'm going to talk only about cattle. And I couldn't help but think about the comment that Bob Weber made about cost of production right now with fuel costs and feed costs and fertilizer costs for raising cattle. And this past fall at age 64, I decided to get in the cattle business. Yes, Dave, I own some cattle now. And it isn't the variable costs of fertilizer to bring pastures along or for supplemental feed to get through winter time. It's the fixed costs that are killing my little bitty operation right now. By the time you buy equipment and physical facilities to have cattle, why, those are really eating us up right now. And it's surprising as I try and convince Mrs. Nielsen about the value of being able to see, smell, and hear cattle compared to having shiny cars, that it's really worth all the effort and the money that we're putting into having a few cows right now. Well, I'm going to try and further along some of the discussion we've had today with the aspects of crossbreeding and straight breeding by the title that I was given. That's breed utilization and production efficiency. And I'm going to see if I can figure out which of these I use to advance. I'll bet this one here would... Nope, that one doesn't work. Which of these little buttons... This one over here? Okay, thanks, Megan. Hey, it works. Start off with a few comments about production efficiency, economic efficiency. That came up earlier this morning, I think, when Tom Brink was visiting, that really it's economic efficiency. And efficiency, in the strictest definition, is output divided by input. If you have an efficiency greater than one from an economic standpoint, then you have more money coming in than you're having money going out. So efficiency greater than one is desirable. But sometimes instead of doing that ratio of output divided by income costs, we might look at profit or a linear equation of income dollars minus income dollars minus the dollars we get in value from our output as compared to the dollars that we spend on our inputs of production. And I'll have a couple of studies that we've done in Nebraska that I'll make reference to, where one of those I'll look at things from a ratio output to input efficiency, and the other one we'll look at it from a profit standpoint. So I want to warn you ahead of time that those are very similar, but yet a little bit different. The second comment that I would make is whenever I think about production efficiency, I try to think as broadly in the total industry as possible. I don't like to just think about cow-calf production or just about feedlot production or just about our processing and packing industry and getting it to the consumer, but rather try and think of all those steps in between that make up the total beef industry. Because in the long run, you can't have one subsector making money all the time and another sector within that industry not making money. Rather, those things have to all average out over time so that everybody gets a chance to stay in business. And that'll show up as I look at some system things later on. And then thirdly, what are the key characteristics that contribute to efficiency? There's lots of things that we measure, lots of things we talk about, but not all those are equally important, and we have to hone those down into the ones that we can learn the most from. Well, the other part of that title is breed utilization. And when we think about ways that we can utilize breeds, it could be a single breed, choosing between breeds and finding that one single breed that we might wish to use. Or it might involve how we use breeds in different crossing systems. And we'll have crossing systems where each breed or a set of breeds will contribute equally over time as both bulls and as breeding females. Rotational crossing fits that category. Composites would fit that type of category where the breed contributes as both a male and a female over time. Then we also have crossing systems, and my colleague Matt Spangler made reference to that in the earlier comments on the program, where we do terminal crossing and breeds fit a role where they either contribute mainly as a sire breed in a terminal cross or as a dam breed or part of a dam breed if it's a crossbred dam in a dam role in a crossing system. So it's just a lot of things to keep thinking about. And I can't help but just coming back to one of the slides I think that Bob Weber put up earlier, and as I listened to all the speakers this morning from that wide array of talent that we've already listened to, and that so many things are, it depends. Everybody's got a little bit different situation as they fit into some segment or across segments in the industry, and a lot of things are just, it depends. So we always got to keep that in the back of our mind. Now, this little picture here is one to remind us about those genetic effects that we're concerned about when we start imagining use of different breeds if we're going to engage in a crossbreed system, or even a given breed if we're going to have a straight breed or pure breed system. And the sires that we're using, the bulls that we're using, are contributing direct genetic effects to their calves and to the system. The dams are contributing direct genetic effects, same one half of fraction, same as the sires. But they also have the full maternal breed effect contribution. And in the case of cattle, because they're mammals and mamas take care of their calves a good portion of the year, why those maternal effects are pretty darn important as well. And then if we have crossbred mothers, why we have the opportunity to capitalize on maternal heterosis that Matt and Bob talked about this morning. And then we have the calves, and those calves are expressing those direct breeding effects that came from the sires and the dams. And if there are two different breeds, the sires and the dams, well, it'd be half of each of those two breeds in the calf, as well as the calf heterosis. So the fact that the offspring is a crossbred would express heterosis as well. Now, as I was searching for cattle pictures, and doing a little time on Google Images to find some cattle pictures, I came across this one here of this bullfighter flying over the top of this bull. And I just couldn't help but caption that as balancing act. So much of the cattle breeding effort that we put in, especially when it comes to crossbreeding, is a balancing act. We're trying to see how all the components fit together and get those two balanced as well as possible. And if we don't do a good job of balancing, well, we can come out with something that hits us in the wrong end of our body. And when those type of things happen, well, we realize that we didn't do something quite right. And again, earlier this morning when Tom Brink was visiting about systems and having a well-thought-out system, why we're trying to make sure we don't do one, a system that ends up hitting us in the backside. So from a production efficiency standpoint, what are the key cattle characteristics? And I am relying on a limited number of studies here to try and simplify this a little bit for us this morning. Relied on a couple of those that Mike McNeil has been involved in. He's been a very clear leader in the economic values and key characteristics for practicing selection. Well, those characteristics that are important for practicing selection are also the key characteristics for evaluating breeds and evaluating how breeds contribute to a crossing system. And then a recent PhD dissertation that was done in Nebraska, Alberto Barone's work. Well, fertility in both cows and bulls is important. Calf survival is important. One of the questions that Twig Marson asked, or comments Twig made this morning, was about increasing output of calves with the same size of cow herd. Well, we have to have better fertility and better calf survival. Those are all characteristics where heterosis stands out as very important, as Bob Weber was summarizing those this morning. Growth rate's an important characteristic. It's been a high focus for discussion in Beef Improvement Federation ever since I made the first meeting in Omaha in 1971, and continues to be an important contributor as a key characteristic. Marbling and carcass fatness, we had a lot of discussion about that in the panel discussion. Increasing marbling, yes. Decreasing waste fatness, or having lower yield grade cattle, both have economic value and are important characteristics. And then finally, on the input side, feed intake, especially feed intake for maintenance, is an important contributor in production efficiency. Well, then when it comes to utilizing different breeds, why we want to be able to make use of the variation that we have between breeds in these key characteristics. And quite frankly, this wide array of breeds that we have to pick from that have variation in those key characteristics, some stronger in one than another, some weaker in one than another, is good. We're very lucky that we have variation between breeds. Breeds of cattle differ because they have different allelic frequencies at many different genes. Some of those differences in allelic frequency are quite extreme, like one breed is fixed for one allele, another breed is fixed for an alternative allele. And those are most pronounced when we look at some of the distinguishing characteristics, like color would be a good example of that. But there's a lot of other differences between breeds and allele frequency that are not quite that extreme. Why do they differ? Well, we as humans have been practicing selection with our lines and breeds and populations of cattle that we've developed over the centuries. And those different selection histories with different goals intended for those have changed allele frequencies. But another reason is different mutation events and the history of those and how those new mutations have had impact and have changed in frequency within different breeds. When we have different frequencies between breeds, we are able to produce more heterozygosity when we cross those breeds, and that's one of the contributors, along with some non-additive, especially dominance, gene action, that we observe heterosis. There's heterozygosity in purebreds. There's just more heterozygosity in crossbreds compared to the average of the purebreds, like Matt Spangler commented this morning when he was defining heterosis. So the fact that breeds differ in allelic frequency, we get more heterozygosity when cross those, and that can give us heterosis. Extreme differences or larger differences between breeds give us more heterosis. So Bos indicus cattle compared to Bos taurus cattle show us more heterosis in characteristics when we cross them as compared to crosses within Bos indicus or crosses within Bos taurus. So if we have situations where we are developing or investigating whether to have a breed used either as a purebred or as part of a composite or as part of a rotational cross where a breed would contribute both as a sire and as a dam in the long run, why we're looking back at those characteristics, those key characteristics of fertility in both males and females and calf survival and so on down the list. That list changes just a little bit if we're going to use a breed or consider using a breed or evaluate using a potential breed as only a sire in a terminal crossing situation. There we're not concerned about cow fertility, but the other characteristics like calf survival and bull fertility and growth, etc., are still important. And if we go to a situation where a breed might be used only on the dam side in a terminal crossing program, again, we have the fertility on the cow side that's important and calf survival and growth, marbling, fatness, because they're contributing half to those calves. But the feed intake for maintenance becomes even more important then, because it's not just the growing calf that feed for maintenance is important, but it's also that very large component of our feed intake bill for the industry, which is in our reproducing cows. So we have to pay a little more attention to that there. So it's time for just a little look at some data. And this is not real new information. This is one of the early studies that I was able to do at Nebraska back in the 1980s. And we had created groups of crossbred cows that differed, that came from different breeds. And our main goal was to work with breeds that were very similar in growth and carcass characteristics, but differed a lot in milk production level. Differed a lot in the milk production they would be able to nurse their calves. And because they differed a lot in milk production, they also differed a lot in maintenance feed intake requirements. And we did a total production system for just that commercial crossing, terminal crossing group through slaughter. And when we analyze that from an economic efficiency and output dollars divided by input dollars, why the cows that were the low milk group were 7% greater in biological and 5% greater in economic efficiency, so economic would be the key one here, 5% greater, as compared to the higher milking groups. So those key characteristics, in this case the big one was the feed intake for maintenance, had quite an impact on economical efficiency. Well, reminding us again of that slide I had up to start, why remembering those direct effects, maternal effects, as well as calf and cow heterosis, leads us to why we continue to talk about and think about using crossbreed. And one big reason is to gain heterosis. And the second one is to combine strengths or overcome weaknesses. as we put together different combinations of breeds. Sometimes when we're thinking about how we combine different combinations, we're thinking about terminal crossing and how a particular breed might perform as a sire versus another breed as a sire or as they perform as a dam. So if we can put together the best sire breed with the best dam breed or crossbred dam, why, we're trying to maximize how those key characteristics come out in that cross. When we have situations where a crossbreeding situation where breeds contribute both as sires and as dams in the long run, like in a composite or in a rotational cross, well, then we're trying to figure out how we can balance those contributions and make use of some offsetting strengths and mix those together in producing our crossing system. Crossbreeding systems can help us in matching our cow types or cow genotypes to specific environments. The wide use of partial Bos indicus in the Gulf Coast area is a good example of that. And with the crossing, we can produce calves from those part Bos indicus cows that match up better for what feeders are looking for when those cattle might move to the Midwest where the corn is. Would like to point out that this comment came up earlier, one of the speakers this morning, about heterosis is usually larger. We see a greater expression of heterosis the harsher the environment that cattle are reared in. That does not mean that if I want to cut production costs and create a poorer nutritional environment for my cattle that I just use crossbreeding as an answer for that. You still want to weigh the benefits of all kinds of improved management, not just crossbreeding. So the big challenge then is to try and come up with systems that we can sustain in a cow herd and keep them relatively simple yet, which it's not always the most easy because we're dealing with what some things that certainly look more complicated to one person or another, look more challenging to sustain in one production setting than another one. And we get back to that it depends situation again. With cattle, because of the low reproductive rate in females, we are handcuffed a lot more than what we are with pigs or with broilers, our big competitors for the animal protein market. With that high reproductive rate, it's very easy to have specialized crossing systems and make use of lots of terminal crossing with pigs and with broiler chickens. With cattle, because of our need to replace cow herds and sustain those cow herds, why terminal crossing becomes a much more challenging and difficult thing to do. And it becomes very difficult to have more than 50%, usually it's less than 50%, just within the commercial crossing population, not considering the total industry population that I'll show in just a minute. So that's just within the commercial cross. Well, we're going to look at a few slides of some examples. And if we have a pure breeding situation or a composite situation, we might draw some pictures that look like the one on the right. I use arrows to show flow of breeding males or breeding females from where they were produced. That little S at the top stands for a seed stock population, and it has sons and daughters born within that go back into the herd, so a normal closed selection type of population. And that population is sending males to the C group, which is the commercial group under the way I've drawn that there, and then the replacement females for the C group, commercial group, come from within. Under natural reproduction, not using AI, why that S group needs to be about 7% of the total population in order to sustain that. If we wish to start using some crossbreeding in the way of a rotational cross, why we'd have an example like I've drawn there on the right-hand side. The little circle down at the bottom is the rotation where daughters of breed B sires are mated to breed C bulls all of their life, and daughters of C sires are mated to breed B bulls all of their life, and that makes up your commercial herd with alternating generations with two breeds. Of course, you could have three breed rotations as well. In order to sustain that, keep that going, well, we still need to have the purebred groups that are supplying bulls. So that's the group B and group C at the top that replace themselves with their males and female offspring. And we would make use of breeds that can complement each other with that balance of characteristics where each breed is being used as both a sire and a dam. And again, about 7% of the industry is in those B and C groups total, and about 93% in the rotational cross. Well, if we want to get over to the terminal crossing side and make use of specialized sire breed versus dam breed crossing, why, we might have just a two-breed cross, as this example shows here on the right-hand side. And again, we're going to be selecting dam breeds based on characteristics that I listed earlier, and sire breeds just a little bit differently on those characteristics. With this type of situation, a very high proportion of the females to sustain that system are in that purebred C group over on the right, top right-hand side, because they have to produce replacements for the pure C as well as for the cross at the bottom. Well, if we want to use crossbred cows and do terminal crossing, one thought might be to copy what is done in swine, and that's to use a three-breed cross with F1 females. So way down there at the bottom, the A by BC, or A little x BC, is the terminal cross, where breed A is the terminal sire breed, the father of the desired calves, and BC is an F1 female, the mothers of those desired calves. And in order to sustain that and do that year after year and generation after generation, why, we need to supply bulls and females to keep that going. So we have that purebred A group producing males, with purebred B group producing males, and purebred C group that's producing females, so that we can do that intermediate step, the B by C. In a swine breeding situation where we have high reproductive rate of females, why, more than 90%, just a little bit more than 90%, can be in that three-way cross at the bottom. So as we look at swine breeding companies that are highly vertically integrated and production units that are highly integrated, why, they can make very good use of that, because 90% or greater of the commercial pigs produced are the terminal cross. With cattle, because of that low reproductive rate, that cross down at the bottom, the terminal cross, is only about 40%. Every time I do the arithmetic and try and make just a little bit better reproductive rate of females, I don't get very far in raising that much different than about 40%. That's 40% of the total, not 40% of the commercial herd. The commercial herd, if we took the B by C group and the A by B by C, within that cross is about 50% at the bottom. Well, the route that we think about as a way to alleviate that is get back to rotational crossing, because of generating replacement females is a big concern to us in running crossing programs. And the rotational terminal crossing, or rotaterminal, that's a code word for that, is shown in this picture on the right-hand side. So there's a two-breed rotation over on the right-hand side of our picture. So we need purebred B and purebred C males being produced to come in and run a two-breed rotation. And then our younger females, our heifers and young cows, through about four calf crops, are in that rotation. And then after those females have had about four calves, three to four calves, well, we can breed them to the terminal sire, breed A at the bottom for their fifth and ensuing calves, so that we are bringing our older cows to the terminal sire and really challenging them to produce fast-growing calves. Again, that's about 40% of the total industry that's drawn up there in that little box on the right-hand side. About 40% of the total is in that terminal cross at the bottom. You don't do a whole lot better than we did with the three-way terminal cross I showed earlier. So, someone mentioned earlier, I'm not sure which of our speakers mentioned, oh, we got 7-10 breeds that have a pretty large presence that we can pick from. I just want to show you a little bit of amount of variation in choices and systems that we can look at if we said we wanted to choose between possibilities that we have with 10 different breeds. So how can we put together different combinations of 10 breeds to run a two-breed rotation or to develop a new two-breed composite and so on? Well, with 10 breeds to pick from, there are 45 unique different two-breed rotations. There are 120 unique three-breed rotations. There are 360 different rototerminal systems that you could have using just those 10 breeds, with a two-breed rotation for the maternal side and a terminal sire. And then there are 45, again, unique two-breed composites, where we consider a composite as a half and half. We keep the fractions the same. And then 210 that are unique four-breed composites. So there's a lot of choices, aren't there, with 10 breeds. Well, I want to tell you about, and this will be my last little bit of data to share with you. We did some simulation work back a little more than 10 or 11 years ago now. We got this work finished up. And we worked with 14 breeds at the time because we were trying to use as much of the GPU and GPE data from the Meat Animal Research Center that we could. And so we worked with 14 different breed combinations. Now, you saw the number of choices that you'd have with 10. When you go to 14 and you go look at rototerminals or four-breed composites, you're over 1,000 different combinations that you can put together there. So, and as we did our simulations, we looked at a total system, so all the purebred groups, all the crossbreeding groups that we'd seen in those previous slides in those little white boxes on the right-hand side. We simulated all those with all the surplus animals that would go to slaughter. It was all done on a value grid basis for slaughter value of those animals, and put in all the production costs as well as we could for the total system. We simulated those on a fixed amount of grass basis as opposed to a fixed set number of animals. We decided that some things had to be fixed in order to compare apples to oranges, so we held the input costs of grass constant. And we also killed all the animals at the same slaughter endpoint, and that was based on outside fat. These were all killed at about 3/10, 3/500 of an inch of outside fat. So we did not have a fours and fives in that example. So what I'll show you is on a profit basis. So it's dollars return minus dollars of costs that went in. And I want to show you this slide again because the balancing act thing comes through again when we look at the results from the simulation work. Now, rather than try and show you which breed or breeds did well or what different things did well, I tried to categorize those by systems because I think that's much more meaningful and educational to us today. because we had lots and lots of crossing systems that were generated for a two-breed rotation or a three-breed rotation or a rotaterminal, I went through and I took the 10 best systems, and I also took the 10 poorest systems, and I compared those to pure breeding, and I took the three best pure breeding systems. There were 14 breeds in all of our simulations, so I didn't want to just take the one best purebred. I wanted to take three, so in case we had any, just thought that was a much wiser thing to do, but realized we're much more selective on the crossing systems than we are in the purebreds, because we had hundreds and hundreds of crossing systems. So the 10 best, 10 worst, as compared to the three best. So from a profit standpoint, if we run a two-breed rotation, we've got about a third more profit running the best two-breed rotations as compared to the best pure breeding systems. So if we were making $30,000, we'd be making $40,000. On the rotaterminal and a four-breed composite, we were about 50% greater in profit. So instead of $30,000, it'd be $45,000. On the flip side, so we're gaining more by specialized uses of breeds in the rotaterminal and using more breeds to balance and induce complementarity in the four-breed composite. The 10 worst were poorer than the best pure breeding. So yes, you can screw up by using crossbreeding as compared to pure breeding. And about a 20% reduction with the poorest two-breed rotations, and even greater as we go to a rotaterminal. So why are the 10 worst rotaterminals poorer than the 10 worst two-breed rotations? Well, it's because you end up using breeds as terminal sires that were better fit as mother breeds and vice versa. So you really end up hurting yourself, so you got to get that balancing act down correctly. So to summarize, breeds of cattle certainly differ, and that is very good. Crossbreeding capitalizes on heterosis, and especially that for reproduction and survival. Making use of breed strengths and being able to complement those in either systems where we use breeds as both males and females, or if we go to a sire versus dam breed, a terminal sire crossing, even more opportunity to make use of differences. There's important key characteristics that we need to keep in mind as we make those breed choice and crossbreeding program choices. And so wise breed choices and crossing systems will improve economic efficiency for the industry, and poor breed choices for specific crossing systems will hurt us in our breeding programs as compared to the better pure breeding ones. And with that, I'm finished. And thanks again for everyone being attentive, and look forward to visiting more with you through the next day and a half.